You're tuned to High Plains Morning On, member supported High Plains Public Radio. I thank you all so much for being here with me. Well, you know, I always tell you about these cool events that I discover while I'm raking through the cultural nooks and crannies of High Plains cyberspace. Well, folks, I found a good one for you, and it's straight out of Kansas. Today at 12:30 p.m. Central, just after this show, actually, you can enjoy a lunchtime lecture from Kansas-based teacher, writer, and researcher Aubrey Streit Krug. And the title of the presentation is pretty great. It's called An Integrative Story, Civic Science Communities for Perennial Crops and People. How High Plains is that? So not only did I find this cool event, I actually have Aubrey on the line with me right now to tell you a little more about it, because I don't know about you, but I have some questions after that title. And well, maybe you don't. Maybe you're a land farmer. Maybe you're like, oh, I know exactly what she's talking about, but I don't, and I want to know. And hopefully you do too. So let's get a little bit of information and we'll find out about this discussion that's happening today at 12:30 Central. Aubrey, thank you so much for joining us today and for being on High Plains Morning.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here. Hi, everyone. I'm Aubrey Streit Krug. I direct the Ecosphere Studies program at the Land Institute, which is a nonprofit agricultural research and education nonprofit organization that's based in Salina, Kansas, and we have collaborators around the country and the world. So the Land Institute researches perennial crops, so perennial crops that grow back, return for each season, and we are building perennial grain crops in particular. So most of the grain crops that my family farms and that many of you farm, these grain row crops, are almost all of them are annuals, and we're creating perennial grains that don't have to be replanted, and we're really excited about the ecological benefits that these new crops can offer. But creating crops, new crops, is a really long-term process. Domestication and breeding take generations, and they require us to collect a lot of data about how plants respond to different environments, to learn how to grow and care for these plants, and to invite people to start to value these plants and crops. If you think about what makes a successful crop, people can actually consume it and grow it, and can sell it. So this is really long-term work. The Land Institute was founded back in 1976, so we've been at this for more than 40 years. And we have teams of plant breeders and ecologists, and also educators, people like me, who are interested in how people learn to care for these new crops. So that's a little bit about the perennial crops piece right there. And the communities piece that goes along with this is that many more people need to be involved in this work for us to be successful in creating these new crops. So we need people to help us grow these crop candidates in many different places, to see how they respond to the different climatic growing conditions, to see what kinds of pests and pathogens might come up in these places, and to share with us how they're learning to build relationships with these plants and start to understand them.
That all sounds like such fascinating work and really relevant to the people across the HPPR listener region. I love that this lecture today is presented by the Center for the Study of the American West. I love when you think, oh, you're in Salina, Kansas, that's still the American West. And this is, you know, people that are growing things in our region. Here we are talking about agriculture right now and how to make it really sustainable, you know, in Kansas and across all of the regions of the High Plains, of the Great Plains. I see that you mentioned you grew up growing wheat. Your family grew wheat. Can you talk a little bit about where that was and how it used to be and how you're kind of looking forward with your research?
Yeah, so my family continues to farm and ranch in north central Kansas, so a mixed grass prairie, primarily growing wheat and milo, and then we have cattle as well that graze some of those pastures and prairies. But as we look to the future of agriculture and what will make it sustainable, we can think about how important being able to hold on to soil is, how important it is to use water wisely how valuable it would be to be able to have lower inputs into those systems, at the same time being able to feed people sustainably. So that's what's led me to be really excited about the Land Institute's work and to be playing a role in developing these new crops that would be perennial versions of wheat, perennial versions of sorghum or milo, and also perennial versions of oilseed crops. So we're working to domesticate a native prairie plant species called Silphium integrifolium, and perennial legumes or nitrogen fixing crops as well. So we know alfalfa, but there are other crop species like sainfoin, which is one that we're working on. So in these crop domestication processes, we're creating communities of people to grow some of these crop candidates that we're working with, specifically Silphium and sainfoin, the oilseed and legume crops, and they're growing them around the U.S., including across the U.S. West, and sharing information about their experiences with us, sharing their stories, sharing their photos of how the plants survive or don't, showing us what pollinators show up on their plants so we can understand that more, taking harvest data. So our first cohort has been harvesting their Silphium this fall, those oil seeds, and sending them back to us so we can understand different yield data. And so it's a long-term process, but we need lots of different people, places, and different cultures and ways of knowing involved in this. So we're really excited to broaden participation.
Now, are you at the Land Institute doing most of that work there on site in Salina, or do you have other sites? Are you looking at the soil composition across different parts of the High Plains? I watch a lot of PBS, so I've seen a lot of the different types of work that they're doing where this is a kind of plant that we're creating that regenerates the soil, that changes the composition. And it sounds like that's very similar to what y'all are doing.
Yeah, one of the most exciting things about perennial plants is that because they live for multiple growing seasons, they have the ability to create deep and extensive and living root systems that persist, that hold on to soil, so you don't have bare soil that would blow, but also maintain and feed that soil community if we think about being able to maintain soil health or restore soil health. So you can't see right now because we're on the phone, but I'm wearing a shirt that says root down. We're really excited about what happens below ground with these perennial plants and cropping systems, as well as what happens above ground in terms of the grain production.
Now, you mentioned pollinators, and I know that happens to be a very hot topic when it comes to agriculture right now. Can you talk a little bit about what you're seeing? This is an NPR station. We hear a lot about endangered options for pollinators and, oh, you should just go do it manually. Are there going to be robot bees? Can you talk a little bit about what you're seeing at the Land Institute with regards to pollination and agriculture?
Sure. So the perennial oil seeds crop in process that we're working with, Silphium integrifolium, I mentioned it's a native prairie plant. It is, as far as we can tell, very drought tolerant. It is one that persisted during the Dust Bowl and thrived. So that drew our attention to it. The blossoms look sort of like sunflower blossoms, and because it is a sort of a perennial relative of the sunflower family, and it's evolved in these prairie ecosystems, it has extensive pollinator relationships with potentially honeybees, but we've made honey from this plant, from bees at the Land Institute, but we've also been studying all of the different native bee and insect species who have interactions with this plant and its ability to support good pollinator habitat. So that's something where it's an active area of research, but we know because we're working with this plant in the ecosystem in which it evolved that it has those ecosystem relationships that were really exciting.
You mentioned drought, which of course across the High Plains, especially where I am in the Texas Panhandle, that is quite talked about. And I know a lot of different projects related to Center for the Study of the American West, different things that are happening in the agricultural departments at the universities across the High Plains deal directly with water. We're seeing a lot of climate events. We're seeing things that are not precedented. And I can imagine working in agriculture, working with the land, there's this inevitable wave of changes happening. Can you give us just a little, you know, kind of snapshot on what you're seeing as far as at least in Kansas right now with regards to what are we going to see in 5-10 years?
Yeah, well, so little that we know, but also so much that we know about the climate variability of the Great Plains, as well as the impacts that we're already seeing in terms of precipitation variability and things like that. And that's where, you know, planning for long-term sustainable agriculture is really important. We need agroecosystems that can be more resilient, knowing that we are warming and our water resources are changing and depleting in some cases. We need to be able to better steward those resources, and we need to have many different species of crops that we are able to feed ourselves from. So sort of creating diversity in the food system is an important aspect of resilience, I think, to climate change. And in addition to those kind of biological and ecological aspects, I think the cultural aspects of resilience when it comes to climate change are really important. So how do people and communities maintain motivation? How do they learn? How do they adapt and grow in ways that are positive? How do they care for each other and the land? These are important aspects of what it will take to actually create a positive transformation in agriculture too. We need thriving and healthy human and more than human communities.
And the people of this region have such a tight connection to the land. There's so much history there. There's so much respect for it. And the cattle production down here, you've got so much reliance on what's coming out of the ground. And I just want you to know what I'm doing, my part is I will not water my lawn, and I have the saddest looking yard in Canyon, Texas. So you're welcome.
Always good to have some native plants and pollinator habitat in the lawn too. Yeah.
Oh, there are several native plants in my yard. Just to wrap up, I know you have to get ready. Your talk is going to be at 12:30 Central today. If I didn't mention, it's on Zoom. Anybody can Zoom into this. The link's going to be at hppr.org. Just click on the events tab. You can find that registration link. It's right there. Just click on tickets. It'll take you to a registration tab. It's completely open to the public. All of these lectures, because of the pandemic, because things have been pared back, we actually have a really great opportunity to listen to these lectures from academics, things that are of interest to the people of the High Plains. If people wanted to get in touch with you, find out more about your work, your research, how could they do that?
Please come visit us online at landinstitute.org. You'll find a lot more resources and descriptions of our work, as well as ways to contact us directly.
All right, landinstitute.org. And Center for the Study of the American West, again, that is going to be today, 12:30 p.m. Central, right after this show. The name of the lecture is An Integrative Story, Civic Science, Communities for Perennial Crops and People. And again, registration link online at hppr.org. It's a fun little lunchtime lecture. And hey, you can learn a little something, right? Aubrey, thank you so much for your time on this. You're going to keep in touch because this is absolutely the heart of the High Plains. Things that you study are the things that people here care about. So I thank you so much for your time. And hey, break a leg.
Thank you so much.